All please rise. This court is now in session.
Please be seated.
Thank you. Good afternoon. We're on the record now in 418 CV 3109. Council, please remain seated. Pardon me, but enter your appearance. First for the plaintiff.
Mark Christensen of Klein Williams for the plaintiff, Fresenius Kabi USA LLC.
Nathan Clark of Klein Williams for plaintiff, Fresenius Kabi USA LLC.
Ryan Post, Assistant Attorney General for the defendants.
Dave Lopez, Deputy Solicitor General for the defendants.
James D. Smith, Nebraska Solicitor General for the defendants.
Well, first of all, I want to clarify something. I received a call from a member of the press yesterday requesting the ability to bring into the courtroom, because of the public interest in this case, a laptop. I entered an order allowing the press to have a laptop or similar device, but not cell phones. I want to make clear why I did both of those two things. First of all, it's not our practice to allow recording devices of any kind in the courtroom or even in the hallways. And that's primarily because of two things. One, we conduct criminal proceedings in this courthouse. In fact, one is going on now. And there are serious security issues with recording, for example, videoing or audio recording, for example, a cooperating witness. Secondly, we don't want any record other than the court's official record. So those are the two reasons. Now, why not cell phones? We have two armed court security officers in the courtroom. They can observe the press and their devices to determine whether they're audio recording or video recording. They can't do that. It's hard to do that with a smaller device. And that's why we limit access to cell phones, except for counsel who have been admitted to practice in our courts. So that's the background for the court's order. So let me visit with the lawyers now. Counsel, my courtroom deputy tells me that there's been a request to mark exhibits by the plaintiff. I thought we were relying on the affidavits in the court file, and I thought it would be simpler to simply take judicial notice of the court file as it exists today.
And that's fine, Your Honor. I was proposing to do that out of an abundance of caution. I would ask the court to take judicial notice of everything we filed with our index of evidence. We've also filed a verified complaint and exhibits to that, and we're relying in part on that verified complaint for our TRO.
Yes,
we also filed an additional document today.
I saw that with botched execution materials.
Yes.
All right. With regard to this state of Nebraska, you all filed some objections to some of the evidence submitted by the plaintiffs, and I denied those without prejudice to reassertion at a later date if necessary. With that in mind, do you have any objection to me taking judicial notice of the entirety of the court file as it exists at this moment?
No objection to that. If we need to reassert our objections, we will.
Later. Okay. All right. All right. I take judicial notice of the court file as it exists at 3:05 p.m. this date. Now, with that, we've taken care of our evidentiary record, so we need to hear the oral arguments of the parties. Counsel, I was thinking that 20 minutes aside would be sufficient. The plaintiff would go first, followed by the defendants, followed by the plaintiff in rebuttal. I was thinking of giving each side 20 minutes, and the plaintiff could reserve up to 5 minutes for rebuttal. Does that sound sensible to you?
I think so, Your Honor. Before we get to arguments, I do have a few objections to the single affidavit that the defendants have offered.
Well, it's already in evidence, isn't it? It wasn't that filed?
Yes, it was.
It was filed, but I assumed I'd have an opportunity to make objections today. It was filed after 5
okay.
o'clock.
Well, all right. Make your objection.
There are just specific paragraphs in the affidavit of Mr. Frakes, Your Honor. First of all, with respect to paragraph 7, that's a conclusion and argument rather than a statement of fact.
Uh-huh.
With respect to paragraph 8, also not a statement of fact, but rather an argument. With respect to paragraph 12, the last sentence of that paragraph is again an argument more akin to what you find in a brief rather than an affidavit. With respect to paragraph 15, there's no foundation laid for this statement, and it states an argument rather than statements of fact. With respect to paragraph 20, same objections. They are legal conclusions and argument rather than statements of fact. Also, this is a contention that's been specifically considered by and rejected by the District Court of Lancaster County. And with respect to paragraph number 21, which argues that revealing the identities of the execution team would interfere with the department's ability to carry out lawful executions, again, it's an argument, Your Honor, and that has also been ruled upon by the District Court of Lancaster County. Those are plaintiff's objections.
Those objections will be, just like defendant's objections, overruled without prejudice to reassertion at a later date if necessary. Now, turning back to the question of time. 20 minutes aside, okay?
That should be sufficient, Your Honor.
More than enough, Your Honor.
And 5 minutes, you can reserve half your time for 5 minutes in rebuttal. Is that okay?
I'm just going to make my argument, Your Honor. If I've got time left, I'll reserve that for rebuttal.
All right. We'll time you. The courtroom deputy will warn you at 2 minutes. Connie?
Warn
at 2 minutes.
Thank you.
All right. Let's get at it, counsel.
Is your preference, Your Honor, that I remain seated?
And pull that mic close to you.
Your Honor, the issue in this case is whether the state of Nebraska, the Department of Corrections, and Director Frakes can misuse the drugs manufactured by Fresenius Kabi to the detriment of Fresenius Kabi. There is no dispute that using these drugs in the manner proposed by the defendants will be a misuse of these drugs. They are meant to be life-saving or life-sustaining drugs, not meant to be agents of execution. Likewise, there's no dispute that Fresenius Kabi objects to and has made their objections very well known to the use of these drugs in this manner. And there's no dispute, Your Honor, that the defendants know of the objections of my clients for the use of these drugs for this purpose. This is not a case about whether Fresenius Kabi opposes the death penalty, whether the state has the right to execute Mr. Moore, or even whether the state may do so by lethal injection. My client is not seeking a stay or of an execution or to enjoin Mr. Moore's execution, but rather to enjoin the state or restrict the state from using its medications to accomplish that purpose. As the court is well aware, the purpose of a temporary restraining order is to maintain the status quo, to give the parties the opportunity to fully litigate the issue and the court the opportunity to fully consider the issues. That's what we're asking Your Honor to do in this instance. The defendants in their brief refer to this as a last moment lawsuit, and they imply that it was some sort of tactical decision on the part of my client to wait to file this lawsuit until this week. Nothing could be further from the truth. To the extent this was a last moment lawsuit, the only individuals, the only parties who are responsible for that are the defendants. The only reason this lawsuit wasn't filed sooner is that defendants have refused to disclose the manufacturers or suppliers of the drugs they intend to use to execute Mr. Moore. In 2013, John Ducker, president and CFO of Fresenius, wrote to then-Governor Dave Heineman and expressed concern about the possibility of propofol being used for lethal injection. Those letters are attached to the verified complaint, Exhibit F to be specific. The Attorney General and the Director of the Department of Corrections were sent copies of those letters. In 2015, Fresenius Kabi discovered that one of its distributors had mistakenly sold potassium chloride to the Department of Corrections. At the direction of Fresenius Kabi, that distributor contacted the Department of Corrections and said the drug could not be used for executions and asked that it be returned. The pharmacist with the Department of Corrections refused to return the drugs and told Fresenius Kabi's representative that they were using it for patient care and the death penalty had been repealed, so it wouldn't be used for an execution. Then again in 2016, Mr. Drucker wrote to Mark Boyer, legal counsel for the Department of Corrections, and asked for his assurance that the state would not use their medications as execution agents. With that letter, he provided copies of the 2013 letters and the list of restricted products from Fresenius. Not only did the defendants ignore these admonitions and requests, they never advised Fresenius Kabi at any point in time that they intended to use their drugs for execution. Defendants' own evidence shows that since at least January of this year, they knew they were going to use these drugs to execute Mr. Moore. That letter to Mr. Moore is in evidence stating the four-drug protocol. It was only on July 13 that Fresenius Kabi learned that the state inventories showed they had potassium chloride and cisatricurium that we believe are ours and that they intended to use those. That prompted another letter from Mr. Ducker to this time to Governor Ricketts, dated July 24th, again with copies to the Attorney General and Director Frakes. He again objected to the use of these drugs and asked that they be returned to Fresenius Kabi for a full refund. Again, his letter and the request were ignored by the defendants. It can be no surprise to these defendants that Fresenius Kabi objects to the use of its drugs and is ready to take legal action to prevent that from happening. If the defendants had been upfront and honest about their intentions, this lawsuit would have been filed months ago and the case decided without an impending execution that makes everything more dire and urgent. It's the defendant's behavior and their lack of openness that explains the reason for the timing of this lawsuit. We should have been here months ago, and we would have been here months ago if they had disclosed to Fresenius Kabi that they intended to use our drugs. In this case, the court is sitting as a court of equity. We are seeking equitable relief. Thus, the doctrine of unclean hands applies. The hands of the state are unclean, Your Honor. They shouldn't be allowed to make those sorts of arguments. The defendants also argue in their brief that Fresenius Kabi, to the extent Fresenius Kabi will be harmed by the use of their drugs, they brought this upon themselves. since they're the ones that are publicizing the risk that their drugs are going to be used. This argument conveniently ignores, Your Honor, the fact that the District Court of Lancaster County, in three separate lawsuits, has ordered defendants to produce and disclose documents and records showing communications with suppliers, DEA records, invoices, inventory logs, and photographs of packaging. Those orders were entered in June 18, Your Honor. Those documents will be produced and disclosed. Defendants characterize our claims of damage as speculative. Yet on the other hand, they protest that such drugs are difficult, if not nearly impossible, to obtain. The near impossibility of obtaining these drugs for use in execution helps prove our point. That is, the medical community and the pharmaceutical community universally condemns the use of medications to kill people. Mr. Frakeson, in his affidavit, and defendants in their brief, refer to our drugs as lethal substances. Your Honor, these drugs are not intended to be lethal substances. They were not developed and manufactured to be lethal substances. They were not approved by the FDA to be lethal substances. They were developed, tested, and approved as life-saving and life-sustaining medications. They were never meant to be lethal substances. The harm that Fresenius Kabi will suffer is not attenuated and speculative, but it is to some degree immeasurable. But rather than cut against the application for a temporary restraining order, that fact, that immeasurable loss of goodwill and reputation, argues for the temporary restraining order. In our brief, Your Honor, we cited a number of cases where TROs or injunctions were issued because the loss of goodwill and the damage to business reputation were immeasurable. How do you measure those sorts of damages? And the courts have equated immeasurable to irreparable. So the fact that we cannot precisely measure the damage that we're going to incur supports our argument rather than cuts against it. Defendants also argue that Fresenius Kabi, like the rest of the world, doesn't know with certainty that it actually did make the drugs in Nebraska's inventory. I would say to the defendants, if they're not our drugs, tell us and provide us with the evidence that they're not. If they do that and they're not our drugs, this case is moot, Your Honor. The case is over. Contrary to defendants' assertion, the harm Fresenius Kabi will suffer is not self-induced. Only the defendants are responsible. We've done everything we can to keep this from happening. Going back to 2013, Your Honor, we've been trying to make sure this didn't happen. Defendants attack the nature of the evidence we have submitted in support of their damage claim, and they argue that it's insufficient. But, Your Honor, that's the nature of a TRO. This is an urgent proceeding. We haven't had a lot of time. We're talking about damage that will be suffered nationwide and worldwide because that's where our customers and users are, around the world. These drugs are used everywhere, Your Honor. The purpose of a TRO is to maintain the status quo so the parties can conduct discovery and support or refute the claims of the other party. It looks like the defendants may actually have evidence that would be helpful to our position. Mr. Frakes has sworn in his affidavit that he contacted at least 40 potential suppliers in six states and found only one supplier to sell them the drugs. We'd like to know the identity of the 39 suppliers in the six states who refused to provide the drugs. They likely refused because they were concerned that they would be damaged if they did. That would be helpful evidence to our position, Your Honor. This case should not be decided in a hurry just because the defendants have put us in a situation where we're within days of the planned execution. Defendants go so far in their brief to say that we have, that Fresenius Kabi brazenly injects into this case speculative argument concerning the possibility of a botched execution. They argue this point, tucked at the back of plaintiff's irreparable harm argument, is as devoid as evidentiary support as it is inflammatory. That's the reason we submitted the additional evidence today, Your Honor, of 10 articles over the last 18 years talking about botched executions, the most recent of which was last night. Tennessee executed someone last night, and according to the news report that's in our exhibit, that inmate gasped and choked and turned purple before he died. There have been many botched executions, and they've been well covered. The other evidence we submitted on that point, Your Honor, is that we know plaintiffs have not stored the cisalpocurium in accordance with the manufacturer's instructions and what's right on the FDA-approved labeling. Cisalpocurium is supposed to be stored between 36 and 46 degrees Fahrenheit. Defendant's own protocol says that the drugs will be stored at room temperature. They haven't presented any evidence that they're not following their own protocol. The evidence before the court says that if it's not stored properly, it loses its potency. There's plenty of evidence that we're at high risk here for a botched execution, Your Honor. They've not stored the drugs in accordance with the manufacturer's instructions. Another factual misstatement in the defendant's brief is at page 23, where they assert that they acquired these drugs prior to Fresenius Kabi's distribution controls being put in place. They cite to a schedule of restricted products that was in place in June of 2018, which is Exhibit B to the declaration of Jack Silhavy. In fact, the distribution controls for the sodium chloride or potassium chloride were put in place effective December 1st, 2013. And that evidence is also contained in Exhibit F to the verified complaint. When Mr. Ducker sent his letter in 2016, he included in the letter to the attorney for the Department of Corrections copies of the 2013 letters and a list of restricted products and a notice that potassium chloride was being added effective December 1st, 2013. And remember, the defendants acquired these drugs also after we had told them in 2015, you can't use our drugs for execution, give them back to us, and they refused. A brief comment on the amicus brief. They submitted an 11-page brief. They used the term meritless 8 times. They used the term frivolous once. They accuse Fresenius Kabi of abusive litigation practices or abusing the litigation process twice. Then they go so far as to state, if lawsuits like McKesson's and Alvagen's were not bad enough, and those are lawsuits in other states, plaintiff, Fresenius, has taken the fight against the death penalty to a new front. Having little hope of successfully abusing Nebraska's courts to secure a stay of the upcoming execution, plaintiff has instead turned to the federal courts. Such disparaging and unprofessional rhetoric has no place in a case of this nature and magnitude, Judge. You've seen frivolous lawsuits. You've seen an abuse of the litigation process. That's not this case. Contrary to the representation of the amici in their motion to file a brief, they have contributed nothing to help in the court's analysis. Your Honor, to obtain a temporary restraining order, my client has only to show that it has a fair chance of success on the merits. We've done that. We renew our request that the court issue an order restraining defendants from using any product manufactured by Fresenius Kabi in administering its lethal injection protocol for the execution of Kerry Dean Moore. Thank you.
You're welcome. Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. The temporary restraining order, the motion for temporary restraining order, should be denied. As you well know, the burden is on the plaintiff, and they have not met their burden. Plaintiff's commercial interests do not outweigh the state's interest in carrying out a sentence of death in a timely and constitutional manner. The United States Supreme Court has repeatedly allowed the use of pharmaceuticals in lethal injection. A temporary restraining order here would deprive the state of its only method of carrying out the sentence of Kerry Dean Moore. To the extent plaintiff points to other methods, those are not available under Glossop v. Proust because they are not provided for by Nebraska state statute. The people of Nebraska have chosen to retain capital punishment, and their government possesses the constitutional and lawfully required means to do so. With insufficient evidence, plaintiff seeks to upend the public's interest. Plaintiff's own evidence shows their distribution controls for these substances were put in place after the department's purchase. I understand we've heard different testimony today. I was unable to locate that in the record before my opportunity to speak. The evidence also shows that the public has no knowledge of any possible connection between the plaintiff and the substances in the possession of the department. The state has not disclosed the supplier. The only information in the public domain that could even possibly tie the plaintiff to the substances in the department's possession is this lawsuit. Plaintiffs stepped right into the spotlight and they're complaining about it. There's also no evidence of any fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation by any state official. What the facts do show, or what the evidence they did submit shows, speculative commercial harms based on future choices made by third parties, and then only if the information that they already admit is not out is later released. On the state law claims, very briefly, Your Honor, because their evidence is based on speculation, they simply cannot show causation, and there's no evidence of causation. Secondly, a manufacturer cannot seek to impose a restriction on the possible third-party purchaser that would deprive the state of its ability to carry out a criminal sentence. On the federal law claims, to the extent immunity does not apply, there is simply no reputational harm that can occur if the state does not disclose the source of the drugs. At this time, the state has not done so, and the case that opposing counsel referenced regarding out of Lancaster County is currently on appeal to the Nebraska Supreme Court. On the Commerce Clause claim, the state is not regulating interstate commerce at all. At most, it's just a market participant. For those reasons, I do want to clear up one other thing. The Tennessee execution that was referenced, Tennessee does not use Nebraska's protocols, so that issue is irrelevant. Defendants asked that the motion for temporary restraining order be denied. Again, the burden is on the plaintiff, and they have not met it.
Have the parties been heard?
Do I have any time left, Your Honor?
Oh, sure. I thought you said you didn't want rebuttal. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said how much do I have?
You have 4 minutes and 41 seconds.
Okay. Very briefly, Your Honor. Counsel for the defendants just said that they obtained the drugs after our distribution controls had been put in place. Again, I would refer both counsel for the defendants and the court to Exhibit F to the verified complaint showing that in 2016, we sent them the list of restricted products, including a notice to distributors saying that effective December 1st, 2013, potassium chloride was a restricted product. That's one of the drugs at issue here. They say that we stepped into the spotlight. Again, Your Honor, I would refer the court to the three orders from the District Court of Lancaster County ordering the defendants to disclose this information. If it would be helpful to the court, I can give you copies of those orders, even though they're public record.
No, you don't need to.
And with that, Your Honor, no further argument.
Have the parties been heard?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, I'm prepared to make my decision as I promised you I would. I'm going to summarize my opinion, which is 12 pages long and will be filed immediately following my summary. The time has come. While he is not a party, Carrie Dean Moore is at the center of this lawsuit. Legal realism and common decency require that he not be forgotten. Mr. Moore is scheduled to die by lethal injection on Tuesday, August 14, 2018, at 10 a.m. Mr. Moore, who is 60 years of age, has spent nearly four decades on death row for the coldly calculated 1979 killings of Omaha cab drivers Ruel Van Ness and Maynard Helgeland. Before the present one, the Nebraska Supreme Court has given Mr. Moore 7 execution dates. This time, Mr. Moore wants his death sentence to be carried out, and he has directed his court-appointed lawyers to do nothing. Indeed, Mr. Moore has sought to have his lawyers dismissed. There is absolutely no doubt of his competence or his guilt. I will not allow the plaintiff to frustrate Mr. Moore and the laws of the state of Nebraska by plaintiff's last-minute lawsuit. I now provide a brief background. The drug protocol that will be used to kill Mr. Moore has been publicly available since November 9, 2017, when Director Frakes publicly notified another death row inmate of the 4 drugs that would be used. On January 19, 2018, Director Frakes gave the same public notice to Mr. Moore. The 4 drugs that are to be used to carry out the death penalty are diazepam, fentanyl citrate, cytricurium besalate, and potassium chloride. On April 3, 2018, the Nebraska Attorney General sought a death warrant from the Nebraska Supreme Court. On May 25, 2018, the state of Nebraska filed a motion to expedite consideration of the motion for execution warrant. Attached to that motion was an affidavit of Director Frakes that represented under oath the following. The Nebraska Department of Correctional Services has possession of the substances to be administered for execution by lethal injection, all of which have expiration dates as follows. Diazepam, expiration date of September 1, 2019. Fentanyl citrate, expiration date of August 31, 2019. Cytricurium besalate, expiration date of October 31, 2018. And potassium chloride, expiration date of August 31, 2018. The substances were obtained from a licensed pharmacy in the United States and have been chemically analyzed and verified as required by the Nebraska Administrative Code. On July 5, 2018, the Nebraska Supreme Court issued the death warrant. The court set the execution date for August 14, 2018. And a time to be chosen by the Nebraska Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections decided to execute the warrant at 10 a.m. On July 24, 2018, the President and Chief Executive Officer of the plaintiff sent a letter to the Governor of Nebraska, presumably by U.S. mail, noting that he had written, quote, your predecessors on more than one occasion regarding lethal injection, end of quote. The author made a demand upon the governor. The author demanded that, quote, you immediately disclose the quantities, lot numbers, inventory logs, and invoices for any of plaintiff's drugs that the state may have acquired for executions, and that you return any such drugs to us without delay. According to the plaintiff, in a letter dated July 31, 2018, and mailed on August 1, 2018, an aide to the governor responded that plaintiff's letter was construed as a public records request and that the governor did not have custody of those records. After the close of business on Tuesday, August 7, 2018, and at 5:55 p.m., the plaintiff filed the complaint in this matter. The plaintiff alleged that it manufactured and distributed cytricurium besalate, which I'll refer to only as cytricurium if I can pronounce it correctly, and potassium chloride, that I'll call KCL. It alleged that the Nebraska Department of Corrections plan to use both of these drugs to execute Mr. Moore, and the plaintiff suspected that these drugs had been obtained improperly from distributors doing business with the plaintiff. The complaint does not seek damages. It seeks injunctive and declaratory relief. With regard to declaratory relief, I note that leading text on civil procedure, Mary Kay Kane, Federal Practice and Procedure, at section 279 states the following. The courts are particularly reluctant to resolve important questions of public law in a declaratory action and under usual circumstances will not use declaratory judgment to halt state law enforcement. And the professor cites the, Justice O'Connor's opinion in Wilton versus Seven Falls that describes the non-obligatory nature of the remedy provided in the Declaratory Judgment Act. Turning back to the complaint, count one seeks a temporary restraining order prohibiting defendants from employing the Sistercream and KCL improperly or illegally obtained from plaintiff in the execution of Mr. Moore. Count two alleges tortious interference with business relationships in that one or more of the defendants are alleged to have obtained these drugs in violation of plaintiff's policies and distribution agreements. Count three sets out a Section 1983 claim alleging that the defendants acting under cover of state law through the procurement and threatened use of the Sistercream and KCL will proximately cause interference with interstate commerce if they do not return the drugs. Count four alleges another 1983 claim based upon the alleged violation of the Due Process Clause because of the defendant's refusal to return the two drugs and the lack of any state law procedure to contest the use of plaintiff's products in executions. Count five is a replevin action seeking return of the Sistercream and KCL obtained from plaintiff or from its distributors. Count six is a declaratory judgment action seeking a declaration that plaintiff is entitled to return of the drugs and declaration that the defendants must refrain from using these products in Nebraska's lethal injection protocol. On Wednesday, August 8, 2018, I denied the request for expedited discovery submitted by the plaintiff. I did so because, from among other reasons, it was too broad. It sought information, quantities, lot numbers, inventory logs, and invoices on all substances to be used in the execution and not merely the two drugs at issue here. On that same date, I conferred with counsel during an on-the-record telephone conference. I gave counsel the opportunity to select from various dates and times for the temporary restraining order hearing and noted my availability on Thursday, Friday, and Monday. Counsel requested a hearing on Friday, and accordingly I set the matter for 3 p.m. on that date. It was further agreed that there would be no live testimony, and the parties intended to rely solely upon affidavits. I gave defendants until the close of business on Thursday, August 9, 2018 to respond. The temporary restraining order hearing has been held as scheduled, and I now deny the motion. Data Phase. In Data Phase Systems, Inc., v. CL Systems, Inc., an Eighth Circuit case, the court sitting en banc clarified the standard the district courts should apply when considering a motion for preliminary injunctive relief. One, the threat of irreparable harm to the movement, two, the state of balance between this harm and the injury that granting the injunction will inflict on other parties litigant, three, the probability that movement will succeed on the merits, and four, the public interest. Later, in another case, the Eighth Circuit tells us that no single factor in and of itself is dispositive. Rather, each factor must be considered to determine whether the balance of equities weighs toward granting an injunction. I believe that the De La Faye's case must be applied to a request for temporary restraining order, and I cited an Eighth Circuit case from which I imply that requirement. I note a slight quirk in the quote merits factor analysis of the De La Faye's case. In this regard, one should consult Planned Parenthood versus Rounds. Rounds explains that the substantial probability of success on the merit standard is appropriate when a party is seeking to enjoin, quote, governmental policies implemented through legislation or regulation developed through presumptively reasoned democratic processes. As to cases where that is not an issue, the district court should still apply the familiar, quote, fair chance of prevailing test, end of quote. Here, plaintiff seeks, in effect, to enjoin enforcement of the duly enacted death penalty. Regardless, plaintiff cannot prevail under either standard. I now turn to an analysis of each of the four factors. Threat of irreparable harm to the defendant. Pardon me, to the movement. Primarily, the plaintiff claims that its reputation will be irreparably harmed if I allow the execution to proceed using drugs manufactured and distributed by plaintiff. There are serious problems with plaintiff's assertions. Although preliminary relief may be ordered to prevent harm to a movement's reputation and goodwill, quote, a finding of reputational harm may not be based on pronouncements that are grounded in platitudes rather than evidence. And I cite two Ninth Circuit cases. First, there is no evidence that the cistercurium that will be used to execute Mr. Moore was manufactured or distributed by the plaintiff. Indeed, the plaintiff admits that there are at least two other firms who manufacture and distribute the drug in the U.S. There is no way of knowing whether the plaintiff's cistercurium will be used, and therefore no reason for anyone to think that the plaintiff will somehow be complicit in the execution of Mr. Moore. That being true, plaintiff's claim of irreparable injury as to this drug fails completely. Plaintiff is on somewhat stronger ground when it comes to KCL. There is evidence that the Department of Corrections is in possession of 30 milliliter vials of KCL in a specific concentration, and I'm quoting here from a filing, plaintiff is the only manufacturer of which it is aware, plaintiff is aware, end of quote, that sells such 30 milliliter vials of the drug in that specific concentration. Secondly, the claim of injury in fact, let alone irreparable injury, made by plaintiff regarding both drugs is far too speculative. The plaintiff worries that if it is in any way associated with the execution, its reputation will be harmed because many healthcare professionals, investors, much of the public, and indeed even the European Union, detest the death penalty. Plaintiff worries that those persons or entities will take out their fury on the plaintiff. The plaintiff has made it widely known that it takes active measures to prohibit the use of any of its drugs for the purpose of execution. For example, there is evidence that since at least August 29, 2012, the plaintiff has sought to prohibit all of its distributors from selling various restricted products to state and federal prisons. Moreover, over the years, the plaintiff has written several letters to various Nebraska governors, making the company's position well known and very publicly so. Indeed, this lawsuit has generated worldwide coverage of the plaintiff's desire to avoid any association with the death penalty. And there I see, I refer to the French press agency that authored an article entitled German Drug Maker Sues to Halt Plan Execution in Nebraska, which was published in The Guardian on Wednesday, August 8, 2018. Consequently, there is no reason for a rational actor to conclude that the plaintiff will bear any responsibility for Mr. Moore's death, and thus there is no rational basis to conclude that the plaintiff will suffer irreparable injury. To the extent that plaintiff makes other claims of irreparable injury, they are of the make-weight variety. For example, it is hard to believe that withholding a small amount of KCL in the possession of Nebraska will have any impact on interstate commerce or the alleged national or worldwide shortage of the drug. Moreover, given the fact that the KCL held by Nebraska is set to expire this month, it could not be redistributed to address any shortage in any event. I now turn to the balance between the harm to the plaintiff, in this case the moving party, and the injury that may be suffered to the defendants. As noted above, at least at this point, the harm to the plaintiff, if I do nothing, seems vanishingly small to none at all. On the other hand, the state of Nebraska will be greatly and irreparably harmed if I grant the plaintiff relief it seeks. I start by recognizing the elephant in the room. The Nebraska Death Penalty Repeal Veto Referendum, also known as Referendum 426, was held on November 8, 2016. The measure asked voters whether they wanted to repeal or maintain a law passed by the Nebraska legislature that eliminated the death penalty. Voters overwhelmingly, roughly 60%, repealed the death penalty ban implemented by RB 268 and reinstated the death penalty in the state of Nebraska. The will of the people, as very currently understood, is plain. With the elephant visualized, if I temporarily stay the execution to protect plaintiff, I will frustrate the will of the people. The Nebraska Supreme Court, after careful and full consideration, has ordered that the death penalty be implemented on August 14. The supplies necessary to effectuate the command of the Nebraska Supreme Court will begin to expire on August 31, 2018. One of those drugs is KCL. It would simply be impossible to implement the death penalty before the expiration date if I granted the temporary restraining order at this time, given the administrative and legal hoops that would have to be jumped through. Plaintiff argues that the defendants will suffer no harm because, after all, any temporary restraining order would merely delay things. Respectfully, that argument is laughable. Let's be honest. As the Supreme Court recently recounted, anti-death penalty advocates have pressured pharmaceutical companies to refuse to supply the drugs used to carry out death sentences. It is therefore not surprising that the legal director of the Nebraska ACLU has filed an affidavit in support of plaintiff in this case. Decades have slipped by since Mr. Moore was sentenced to death. The people of Nebraska have spoken. Any delay now is tantamount to nullifying Nebraska law, particularly given the rapidly approaching expiration of two of the drugs and the total absence of any feasible alternatives. I refer now to the affidavit of Director Frakes, where he says under oath, quote, I have attempted to purchase additional substances to be administered for execution by lethal injection from the supplier who supplied the current substances. That supplier is unwilling to provide additional substances. The director further states under oath, I do not at present, nor at any time in the future, have an alternative supplier for any of the four substances to be administered for execution by lethal injection. In short, the balance of the harms tip heavily in favor of the defendants. I turn next to the merits. To say the least, this is a very strange suit. There is virtually no legal authority that is directly on point regarding any counts of the complaint. Factually, Director Frakes has sworn that the substances were obtained from a licensed pharmacy in the United States and have been chemically analyzed as verified and required by the Nebraska Administrative Code. The Nebraska Department of Correctional Services did not obtain any of the substances in its possession by any fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation by the department, or, to the best of the affiant's knowledge, by any fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation by any official of the state of Nebraska. The director continues, the Nebraska Department of Correctional Services did not engage in any measures to circumvent plaintiff's distribution control. And the director goes on to say, the Nebraska Department of Correctional Services does not and did not have any contract with plaintiff. Unless Director Frakes is lying, it would seem that the plaintiff would have a rough row to hoe on any of the claims asserted in the complaint. In short, I cannot say that the plaintiff has a, quote, substantial probability of success on the merits, end of quote. Nor can I say that plaintiff has a, quote, fair chance of prevailing, end of quote. I turn next to the public interest. The public interest weighs heavily in favor of defendants. Many people of good faith object to the death penalty. However, the electoral process of Nebraska has worked, and those processes as they were intended to work. The Nebraska legislature decided to kill the death penalty, and after that, and very recently, the people decided to resurrect it. While I have no beef with corporations, German or otherwise, I cannot say with a straight face that the public interest in any way favors the plaintiff. Sure, the plaintiff just might, although it is very doubtful, suffer harm to reputation. But the public interest is far broader than corporate self-interest. In this case, it literally has everything to do with the functioning of a democracy. I now conclude. Although plaintiff's counsel are some of the best and brightest, and they have made every conceivable argument possible for their client while under enormous time pressures, The plaintiff has come up short on every data phase factor. It would be a gross abuse of my discretion if I granted a temporary restraining order. Therefore, it is ordered that the motion for a temporary restraining order, filing number 7, is denied. Counsel, my courtroom deputy will provide each of you with a copy of my opinion. My opinion will be filed momentarily. For the press, after we recess, copies will be available from the court clerk. Counsel, is there anything further that we can take up?
Yes, Your Honor.
What's that?
My client will be filing an expedited appeal to the 8th Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a precedent for that, I need to request, make an oral motion to the court that the defendants be enjoined from using our drug pending that appeal to the 8th Circuit. And I so move.
Do you wish to be heard on that, counsel?
The state would oppose that motion. I don't think we need to say anything further, though.
Tell me again what you're asking me to do.
To enjoin the use of our drug pending the appeal to the 8th Circuit.
Okay, how is that different from your motion for TRL?
It's probably not a lot different, Your Honor, but
okay.
As a precedent or a requirement of our appeal, I need to make that request to the court.
All right. With respect, your motion is denied.
And my second request then, Your Honor, would be for an expedited transcript of this hearing today for use in our appeal to the 8th Circuit.
Well, I so order that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah. So the courtroom deputy will get the audio transcript to one of our reporters right away and expedite it.
Yes.
Anything else?
Nothing further from the state.
Go, Your Honor.
We stand in recess.